Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Mondays here. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal is back from Desert, Palm Desert, Canyon Desert, what some sweet place that Sinatra probably used to golf at out in the California region. How was it?
Beautiful, I'm not going to lie, but the one thing I didn't realize was, I'm like, oh, I'm going to California, and I looked up the weather, I'm like, it's supposed to be 70s, but the desert gets cold at night.
Yes, it does.
Very much colder than expected. I thought, like, oh, it's going to drop down. 60 in the desert at nighttime is a lot different than 60 in the daytime at Nebraska.
No, I mean, you have maybe a bit of a breeze, but that breeze knocks you down, much like the Midwest gale force out of the Canadian North.
Yeah, so it's
different but bad.
It's just strange because I'd get a sunburn during the day and it'd be warm all day, and then
you'd be shivering at night because you're in flip flops in a tank.
Yeah. So, but overall, very nice trip, beautiful place.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. We have plenty of football to get into. Husker basketball, Husker baseball. We'll chat about the high school scene and college basketball with Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity in about 15 minutes. Coach Charlie McBride, I haven't talked to Mr. Blackshirt for, about a month, so I'm excited to talk with him. Greg Smith will hit some recruiting for us. We'll hear from Fred Hoiberg. We'll hear from those that spoke at the Kobe Bryant Memorial Service in about a half hour. That's been, it's been gut-wrenching, but there's been moments of humor, and not to make ha-ha out of a situation at all, but there's been some stories that have been specifically Shaq's that we'll hear that made you smile a little bit as you...
I mean, it is a celebration of life.
It is a celebration of life, but this thing's so devastating that it's hard to not be still sad for the family of the Bryants and the families that have been affected with this crash. So we'll hear some moments from Shaq and Jordan and Vanessa Bryant. That's coming up. You can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Find us on Twitter at Schmidt _ radio. That's me, Chris Schmidt. Elijah Herbal at Herbal Essences, and can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com. I want to go back to Saturday, and we had a great chat Saturday with the weekend edition, myself, Kranak, and of course, Sharpie. And we dove into TJ Bowlers a little bit, and we'll get to Scott Docterman's story in just a moment. Really nice write-up by Scott on the recruitment of the outstanding linebacker and edge presence. And you've got the who's who of the Big Ten and Bama and Cal. After the kid, how do things navigate here the next 8 months or so for a guy that's, you know, a top 50 outside edge presence in Iowa's backyard, in Iowa State's backyard? What can Nebraska do? So some enlightening stuff from Scott Docterman of The Athletic. Couple of things that we need to get into. One, Nebraska baseball, a tough outing, all three of them at the Tony Gwynn Classic. And Nebraska now 1-5. And just a quick thought on Husker baseball. Listen, I think it'll get turned around. It's been tough out of the gate for Nebraska. They have led in all six games. They have had middle inning effort there. They have not had middle inning effort, middle inning execution. So you've given up some crooked numbers in the middle part of the game, or at the end of the game. You lost a nail biter to Arizona 3-2. You lost to San Diego State. That was tough to swallow. And you had a slugfest that was going your way. You're up a touchdown, and then you lose 12-11 against San Diego. So things need to get figured out with middle relief and the bullpen. Starting pitching's done well enough for you. The offense has been good enough for you for Nebraska baseball. You've also made some errors. You've had some missteps that have added to those crooked numbers for Nebraska baseball. And in their defense, they have not been outdoors a ton. So you're kind of getting your footing, literally. And Nebraska will need to shake things off as they head to Arizona State this weekend. And I think Bolt and Christie and crew will get things figured out. Not panic time at all, but you could be 5-1 versus 1-5. Nebraska's offense also in game 2 and 3 of the Tony Gwynn Classic also went south. I mean, he didn't get worked. He got beat 4-2 and 3-2, but he had 31 strikeouts in the weekend, despite some really good power numbers, some slugging percentage work done by the Husker offense. The lineup seems to be pretty stabilized, but you need your pitchers to make it happen, and you need your defense to back it up.
I don't think we've seen a performance from this team yet this year where everyone's working cohesively. Whenever the pitching's working, the hitting's not there. When the starting pitching's working, the relievers aren't there.
Hey, it's like complementary football. You get a stop on defense, and you go score on offense, and you cover a kickoff.
I mean, yeah, you're right. It's just when the pieces aren't all there. I mean, whenever the relievers are pitching well, it's because the starting pitcher got chased after 2 innings. So whenever you put up, you know, 2 runs in 2 straight days, you can't expect to win, even though your pitching's holding them to 7 runs across those 2 days.
Sure.
And then whenever you put up 11 runs, your pitching gives up 12.
So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. As our old buddy Charlie Meyer says, it's just baseball. And it's a funny thing. So that's a thought on Husker baseball. Husker basketball is it's trying. It's trying for Fred. It's trying for this roster. They'll keep plugging away. And it's a busy week for Nebraska basketball. You have Illinois tonight. You'll have Ohio State. We'll be down at Longwells Thursday ahead of that tip-off. Ohio State, a big win against Maryland. So Ohio State's kind of stabilized themselves. They showed early as they rose to number 4 or number 5 in the country that they've got the talent to be there. But the Big Ten's been so murderous, night in, night out. Some games you're not supposed to drop, some games that it's quite acceptable to drop in the heavy schedule of the Big Ten. I'm not sure where I'm at tonight. You know, nothing would surprise me, as in, do you get a Maryland performance or do you get an Iowa performance? And you could see a gray area. You could be somewhere in between where Nebraska plays well but doesn't win. The thing that you think you can chalk things up to actually being accurate with is you're going to have a good first half but not a good second half. You're not going to have 2 good halves of basketball. So we'll see where Nebraska goes. We'll talk to Jacob Padilla more here from Fred Hoiberg on that a little bit later. But here's just what I've noticed. We may have touched on this after Michigan State. We had, you know, a full house down at Longwells Thursday, people in red, people in green, and you're still really relatively full. There were a few empty seats with Michigan State, but you just kind of bump into people. Like, people were able to get tickets to Michigan State, or your normal season ticket holders gave them to people. So people still went. But your typical season ticket diehards, not all, but some, by Michigan State folks, I don't want to say had seen enough, but the interest is really, it's waning. I'll watch tonight. We'll probably talk about it tomorrow. But you, the Nebraska fan out there, you're waiting for something good to happen so you can kind of re-engage and get back with it. I mean, this has been a tough losing streak for all. You're sitting at 11. You want to make sure you're not getting that double six-pack going tonight. And Illinois is a really good basketball team with big dudes down low, but they're supposed to suck from three-point land. That has not been the case when Nebraska's played opponents. And it's not been Fred or Doc or what Nebraska's done schematically. The scheme will work. Guys got to go execute it. And you've got a real maturity issue with this basketball team when it comes to not getting down or having poor body language or kind of, they're not quitting, but they're not as locked in as they should be. where if something bad happens, and you saw it in football at different points in different seasons, where you're waiting for that levee to break, and then it's all downhill. Here comes the water. Here comes the snowball, right? There's a real reality to a snowball effect with this basketball team. When something bad happens, that could be a missed layup. That could be a shot that's rejected. That could be a closeout three. That could be not getting your hand up and contesting a three. All those little things turn into a bowling ball that is chasing Indiana Jones. That is real. And we'll see if Nebraska can finally stop that ball that's rolling down on top of them. Northwestern looms this weekend. Ohio State awaits. You've got three games this week. Can Nebraska go 1-2? Can they go 2-1? I don't know. From a mentality standpoint, you've seen guys rise up and have a good streak. You've seen guys fade a bit. And you see the last couple, three games after really good consecutive outings where you think you might see some consistency, guys like Cam Mack and Cross, not all their fault, but guys that were doing well and keeping in games, they've cooled off. You've also seen some boats rise up here with Ivan playing better. Burke responded well with a good game. And Thor, we'll see where he's at from a health standpoint tonight. So expect more of what you've seen from Nebraska basketball. They'll fight. They'll keep grinding, but eventually they'll get overwhelmed.
It feels like to me they're going to have to build a 20-point lead just to have a shot in any of these games the rest of
Brother,
the way. They're going to have to build a 20-point first-half lead just to be able to survive the second half.
They got to hit some shots, which is the most freaking obvious statement I've ever made on radio. But I don't believe they can hit shots. They're taking threes that are open, not hitting them. They're getting to the rim with their athleticism, not finishing. And then you're so frustrated. And even if you do get to the line, that's no happy place for this basketball team.
What's encouraging to me, though, is most of the time, at least 35 minutes a game, it doesn't seem like it's ever an effort issue.
No.
You'll get that run out of halftime and the guys will hang their heads, but then they'll respond eventually.
They'll respond, but the second, you got to know that between their ears as, okay, we're close here, but there's got to be some element of here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Not even if you're within three or you're within one, and I'm talking about where they were at with Michigan State, where they were at with the Wisconsin game. They come out and just get freaking drilled in the second half. Okay, TJ Bowler's standout outside linebacker / defensive end. He's a guy that, man, he's a top talent. He's in Iowa City. He's a 3.9 GPA dude who wants to be a civil engineer who unloads grocery trucks for produce, right? 6 to 8 every morning. That's his gig. I tip my cap to him because that was my Saturday morning gig before I went out to Nebraska football games. Get in there super early, unload the truck, get the old fruits and nuts, as my wife would say, situate, and then shoot down to O Street and get rolling in college. Bowlers and his family, his dad played at Iowa 5 years, multiple degrees, computer software engineer dude. His wife and the kid's mom, just incredible people from the sounds of it. And you've got a mad chase right now for Bowlers, who's looking for that perfect fit, right? He wants academics, and he wants a place he can go ball at and play high-level college football. Justin Wilcox, what he runs, how multiple he is at Cal, that clearly is intriguing to the Bowlers standout. Mom and dad are letting Junior make this decision. Dad is out of the decision-making process. Alabama's gotten in there. A&M is there. Iowa State was his first offer with Coach Campbell. I mentioned being a civil engineer. Nebraska's got a really good engineering program. Iowa State's got a dynamite engineering program. You have Wisconsin and Nebraska that don't have official visit dates yet, but they're there. And the main reason, in this article by Doctorman, he asks about Nebraska and some really impressive things that Scott Frost, Coach Dawson, and Coach Chenander have done with the Iowa prospect. We'll spend some more time with Greg Smith on this, but from a personal touch and a personal connection standpoint, Nebraska has really made a dent with bowlers. Does that translate to getting a commitment from the guy? I don't know, but mom and dad really like him. TJ really likes Nebraska. Wisconsin is there, and I think Wisconsin, and we spent some time on this Saturday, may be the team to beat because they have a history of just cranking out linebackers, and they are multiple. That setup, even though they run a 3-4, very diverse, and reading between the lines, it sounds like that may be the best fit from a schematic standpoint for a bowlers. Wilcox is a former Wisconsin guy, clearly, so Cal, from a distance standpoint, I don't know if they're out of the running or not, but you have a Cal visit that's an official visit set for June 5th. You have an Iowa State visit that's the 12th of June. Bowlers has been to Nebraska several times on unofficials, and the family's just kind of concerned if he doesn't choose Iowa, what type of backlash we'll have. It's not that there's bad blood between Iowa and Bowlers, but there just seems to be a bit of a disconnect. We'll see where Nebraska comes in on this race. And the discussion point is, does Nebraska have a position they can advertise? We will get you to the league if you come here. They're working on that. Jacob Bedilla's next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Jacob Bedilla with us from HailVarsity.com and a magazine at Jacob Bedilla _ is where you follow him. Jacob, brother, you've been crushing it all weekend between high school hoops, Creighton coverage, Nebraska basketball inside. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. Been a good week already.
Exactly. And we'll get to some prep thoughts and some Jay's thoughts in a moment. All right, unlock this riddle for us, or this Rubik's Cube of frustration. Lay out how Nebraska ends their streak tonight. You have the answer.
Well, I guess pack the paint, force them into a lot of threes, and hope that, unlike basically every team that Nebraska's played during the last handful of games, that they're not hitting. Because
so prayer.
Illinois is, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a reason. Hoiberg said they're going to play the percentages some, and that's a smart thing to do considering Illinois is one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the Big Ten. You've got Alan Griffin coming off the bench and shooting 41% that you have to take account for. But after that, the next best shooter is Trent Frazier at 34%, and he's kind of the guy that takes the most volume for them. Outside of them, none of the other guys really shoot all that well. They're all 30% for Io Desumu, 27% for Andres Feliz, 30% for Georgie Bajanashvili. Like, they've got a lot of guys out there that just aren't very good three-point shooters. I don't know exactly how they're going to be able to slow down Kofi Coburn, because 7'2", 290 is ridiculous.
It's huge.
Especially when you're going against a 6'8", 250-pound 17-year-old. So he's giving up just a little bit of size there, but I think Nebraska, in addition to kind of packing the paint, they're going to have to be better with their rotations and their closeouts and their contests to force Illinois into shooting like it normally does. And that's something that Hoiberg and Thorbjørnarsson mentioned recently. Is like they just haven't been on point, and when things are starting to go wrong, it's gotten worse, and they've kind of stopped doing what they're supposed to. So they're going to have to be locked in defensively all game long. And then they're going to have to get shots to fall on their end as well, which has happened a few times this season, but it's not something that you've really been able to count on.
You know, it's not new. You see it in basketball. If it ain't going for you well on offense, the effort and intensity isn't where it needs to be consistently on defense. Case in point for Nebraska, they'll miss some shots against Sparty. They'll get back, and they won't close out. And next thing you know, Sparty's ripped off three straight threes with a couple of passes and a screen. You know, that's kind of on the players, isn't it, to battle through? They just seem so – disgruntled's not the right word, but they just seem so out of air right now because, I mean, nothing's good happened for a long time.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same problems over and over again. And part of it is roster construction and just kind of their own limitations, but part of it, too, is effort and attention to detail and some things that the players can control. And that's kind of what when you're in the danger zone and you've got this long losing streak where guys aren't necessarily doing what they're supposed to all the time, that's when it really spirals out of control and you end up losing as many as they have in a row now, the more than any other team has ever done in the history of the program. So that's the stuff that Hoiberg said. He's tried pretty much everything. Like, he's tried getting on them. He's tried being positive. He's tried watching film. He's tried kind of letting them figure it out. Like, he's taken pretty much every angle with this team, trying to get to it and figure out how to get these guys through these struggles. And it hasn't just worked out yet. And I, at this point, I think they just need to have a game where things go right for them. I mean, you hate relying on luck and just kind of having a great shooting day or whatever to kind of carry you through, but it just seems like they need something good to happen for them, and then maybe they can pick up that momentum and build on it and then take care of business individually better than they have been, because there's just so much failure right now, and it's hard to find the motivation, and it's hard to go out and put everything into it when you feel like, oh, no matter what we do, it's not going to work out. So Nebraska just needs to find some success that they can build off of. And honestly, like the Maryland game, I at this point, considering the losing streak, I don't know if that helps or hurts the fact that they were able to get so close and weren't able to finish it off. So now you're like, well, that's about as well as we could have played, and we still couldn't get it done. But so that they're just kind of in that spot now where they've got to have something go right for them.
You nailed it with the there's so much failure, and it comes down to mental toughness and attitude. And Fred can try and get them ready, but they've eventually got to pull through on their own. And that's part of the growing pains for this season. And we'll see where the team kind of shakes out tonight. And listen, Ohio State's really, really good, but they're vulnerable on the road. Just like many teams in the Big Ten, and I know there's not a an apples to apples matchup deal with the Buckeyes that loom, and then you got Northwestern. So this could be a turnaround week for Nebraska. No one's feeling it though. What's your vibe before we get to high school hoops? What's the vibe you've been getting feedback wise? I mean, Nebraska fans want to see Nebraska win. They'll show up at PBA, but from an interest level, the fan base is not expecting much at all. Is that where you're hearing and seeing?
Yeah, I think we've gotten to that point, and that's going to make a really interesting atmosphere, especially if they aren't able to get a win kind of out of the way in these next two with Illinois and Ohio State, and it basically comes down to that Northwestern game on Senior Day. I'll be really interested to see what the atmosphere is like there and what the crowd's like, and because you've got two seniors on the team. One of them isn't even playing right now since Monte Kavassa's season has already been ended by the hand injury. Mm-hmm. So basically it's just Hanif Cheatham is the one guy that you're kind of like honoring on Senior Day. And so it's not like and you've known him for 1 year, both these guys for 1 year. So there's not a huge like emotional tie, especially with how the season has gone. So I'll be interested to see kind of what the fan turnout is like for that game, just what the overall atmosphere is like, what the team's kind of energy is like on that game, because obviously general senior day, you got a lot of guys that want to go out and get it done. You want to send your seniors out on a high note, and these guys don't have the kind of years of shared experience. And again, like I said, you just have one guy that's actually playing now as a senior. So this three-game stretch, like you mentioned, these are all winnable, but if you go 0-3, then those last two games are going to be rough. So hopefully they can find a way to get a win out of the way in these next few and then maybe build towards something a little bit more.
Jacob Padilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine, Hoops Insider at @JacobPadilla_. Jacob, about 5 minutes, so let's focus here on boys' districts and what lies ahead for state. And love your high school roundup, and you had a chance to see some really incredible high school basketball. What's your sense heading into to districts here? Kind of lay it out. What you're, I know the official district pairings don't come out till tomorrow, but from a Lincoln perspective, start there. You know, what's it looking like for Pius and North Star when it comes to their chances to get to state? What's the road they got to go through?
Well, last I looked, I believe North Star is going to be in Central District.
Right,
is looking like. So that is going to be a tough one, especially with the way the Eagles are playing right now. And you know, Donovan Williams is not going to go down easy in that one. He's getting 30, 40 shots off, regardless of what happens in that game. So that I think that'll be one of the more interesting if that's the matchup we get in that district final. North Star, probably of all the two seeds, has more upside than anybody. So Central goes from, they have a great week, and their reward is they get Donovan Williams and North Star in their district. So that feels like I don't think that's the way they would have liked to have it play out, but they're playing well right now, and I think they're ready to take on anybody. As for Pius, they've obviously struggled quite a bit in the second half of the season, not have nearly as much success as they did early in the year. And they're going to get a tough matchup in the first round with Omaha South if they get to the district final there. But you know, the Packers, obviously reigning Class A champions, and they kind of found a way to win it last year despite not having the most talent heading down to Lincoln. But they got it done, and they've got that experience, and most of those guys are back. So that's going to be a tough one. You're gonna need just a great performance out of Kobe Rada and the Easley twins. Those guys are going to have to shoot the ball really well to be able to keep pace with South, but their athleticism and the guards they have, the ability to get to the rim, they're going to have a tough time kind of matching them bucket for bucket inside the arc. So the Bolts are going to have a really good shooting percentage from the perimeter, I think, to make it out of that district. But as we've seen at different points this season, they're capable of playing at a high level. Mm-hmm. They jumped to number one in rankings at one point early in the season after a great start. So they've got a chance for sure. But those are probably two of the potential district finals that will be, I think, more interesting or probably some of the most enjoyable matchups we'll get in these district rounds.
Bellevue West has been phenomenal. Millard North's been incredible. Central and South, I mean, you've got really awesome high-level hoops with Solace and company at Millard North. What's your take? Got about a minute and a half. What's your take here on Westside? I saw him Friday against Southeast. I love Jalen, and I love the crew, Nagambi.
Jayden.
Yeah, I mean, they are phenomenal, and they were right there against Central. How dangerous is Westside right now? What's their path?
Yeah, I was at that Central Westside game, and they had them on the ropes all the way, and then Central just kind of pulled off a comeback down the stretch in the fourth quarter and made a couple more plays down the stretch and had a couple guys step up. And Westside, they've got so many guards, and they're so tough. And you got guys like Reggie Thomas and Chandler Meeks, the sophomores, kind of stepping up and playing bigger than they are. You've got Jaden Booth and Carl Brown, two of the better shooters in the senior class, and Booth is obviously a complete scorer. And then P.J. Nagambi is a guy that is capable of playing at a really high level there. So they've got a really good group of players. The downside for them is they just don't have any size. Their biggest guy is Carl Brown, who's listed at 6'4" and is a three-point shooter. So we saw that in the Central game as the Eagles' 6'8 senior center, Deng Du, came off the bench and had a big game, scored 15 points, which is his most as an Eagle. He moved here from Minnesota this season and had his best game of the season, and that really had a huge impact on that game. So Westside, they've got the guards to play with anybody, but if they run up against teams that can really use their size advantage, it's going to be tough. So that's they're kind of like a little bit like what we're seeing with Creighton right now, just in terms of going all in on small ball because that's where the most talent lies.
Jacob, awesome stuff. We'll get caught up here next week. Thanks for a few, bud.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Your chance at DeBebe tickets coming up as he's at PBA on the 11th of March. You'll hear the music bed. We've got this edited, correct?
Yes, I made sure of that. I went through and listened to it a couple times. It's edited down. It's perfect.
Thank you. So we've got a pair of tickets all week for you, each day with Hail Varsity at ESPN Lincoln. And we'll tell you when to call. But this will be your cue. Or no, it won't be.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to put up the Jacob Padilla stuff up on Twitter for all the people.
You're good.
Would you like to hear it?
No, we're fine. We'll move on. Let's spend a minute here on the heart-wrenching memorial today. I know it's a celebration of life, but Kobe Bryant honored and remembered by so many today at the memorial service at Staples Center. Vanessa Bryant offering a poignant portrait of her NBA superstar husband. And you had some anecdotes from teammates and mentors. We'll hear from Vanessa Bryant in a moment. We'll hear from Michael Jordan in a moment. But more will come out. And I know Jimmy Kimmel kind of welcomed the crowd, remembered the family. But this made me stop and smile a little bit, because only Shaq can bring some laughs to and it is a celebration of life, but very somber day and mood at Staples Center. But here's Shaquille O'Neal and his story on his teammate and friend Kobe Bryant.
The day Kobe gave my respect was the guys were complaining. I said, Shaq, Kobe's not passing the ball. I said, I'll talk to him. I said, Kobe, there's no I in team. And Kobe said, I know, but there's an in me in that So I went back and told Rick and Big Shot Bob. I said, just get the rebound. He's not passing.
That is funny. You're in the midst of a three-peat. Phil Jackson's over there. Shaq is doing his thing, still in his prime. Robert Horry has bailed the Lakers out and pick a finals team at least five different times in his career. Rick Fox with the best hair in the NBA wants the ball on the block. And Kobe's like, yeah, I'm going to shoot it, rebound it. That was pretty funny. But there is a me in team. Michael Jordan was such a gentleman today. When I think of Michael Jordan, you think of the guy that is such a relentless competitor to the point of obsession, and the type of competitor that is not going to necessarily help you up, but he would make sure he'd step on you when you were down. He wants to win that badly. It's great on the basketball court, but from a personal standpoint, what type of guy is Jordan going to be? Is he going to be a guy that helps and mentors, or is he going to be selfish and mindful of somebody that could, and he knows that it's very rare, but someone that could challenge his legacy as greatest ever? And it was pretty cool to see Michael Jordan there in support and you'd expect that, but I didn't know how deep their relationship was until today, and maybe I'm not paying attention to it, but Jordan would give advice, but he just doesn't seem like the type of guy to go Yoda with people.
Especially when Kobe is the type of guy that wanted to one-up Jordan in everything. I mean, did you ever see Jordan's last All-Star game? Where it's Jordan hitting a fadeaway shot with like 10 seconds left. You think that's the winner. Puts Kobe's team down three, and then Kobe goes to the other side of the court and gets fouled on a three, knocks down three free throws, and sends it to overtime. Mm-hmm. That's just who Kobe was.
Well, and he modeled himself, and he wanted to be – that's the bar you're chasing, and you may never get it. But Jordan was – who he wanted to impress.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And but, you know, even with Jordan, you see different documentaries. MJ's talking about, well, you know, Kobe's the most like me because he copied everything I did. And that wasn't necessarily a compliment. There was a little bit of annoyance in the voice. But when push came to shove, Jordan was a mentor to Kobe. And Jordan was a guy that was there for Kobe for his career. And I thought the comments by Jordan today about Kobe was very appropriate, just how proud and impressed he was of Bryant as a family man, because all these superstars are anything but perfect away from the court, and they're not perfect on the court. And there's been enough that's gone on with Michael Jordan in his personal life. There's a lot of do-overs he would like to have if you'd sit down and ask him, probably. Not that he's an awful parent, but you get to a point, how involved when you're a superstar are you with your kid's life? And I think there's some things that, you know, everybody can work on when it comes to being a good father and a good mother. I'm in line to work on a lot of it. But here is Jordan touching on, the potential new meme that is out there. And you have a crying Jordan face that is slapped on everything and anything on social media and on the internet. And this was Michael Jordan at his Hall of Fame speech. Jordan, cognizant that with tears streaming down his cheeks, talking about Kobe Bryant, that there could be a new meme out there.
Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years.
Heartbroken. He called Kobe his little brother, and there was a brother-like relationship between Jordan and Kobe. Last thought here. This is Vanessa Bryant, parting words to Kobe and Gigi. And I've been watching a lot of social media, and there's quite a few people I follow on Twitter that are huge Laker fans. And this, just the clips you see of this memorial, is it's so gut-wrenching and devastating because of the sadness that exists. Mm-hmm. Despite the Jordan commentary trying to keep it light, Shaq's story, but this hits home if you've ever lost anybody in your life that's so close to you. And Vanessa says goodbye very eloquently.
God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together. Babe, you take care of our Gigi. And I got Nani, Bibi, and Coco. We're still the best team. We love and miss you, Boo Boo and Gigi. May you both rest in peace and have fun in heaven until we meet again one day. We love you both and miss you forever and always. Mommy.
That is so well done, but so sad.
Heartbreaking. It is.
We'll wind down hour one. Charlie McBride's coming up 15 minutes. Mr. Blackshirt. Spring ball is around the corner, thankfully. March 9th gets things kicked off. We'll talk to Coach about what to expect from the spring. Some defensive thoughts. I miss Coach McBride. Excited to chat with him. Greg Smith coming up. We'll wind down hour one with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
What final time this hour? Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's tell you about West Blue Realty. In 2020, the real estate professionals at West Blue Realty can help you move. They specialize in residential home sales in Lincoln and surrounding communities. They'll make the next one a smooth one for you. And when you mention Hail Varsity, West Blue Realty can provide you up to $1,000 on the closing of your next home purchase. Tom Luby can make that happen, 402-540-3768. Or Kelly Hoffschneider at 402-202-2312. For more details, log on today, westbluerealty.com. Do you have agricultural land you're looking to sell? West Blue Realty can help with that as well. They have plenty of experience selling ag land, and that means they can handle anything from live auctions to sealed bids to general land listings, and they've sold land and different counties around Nebraska, so they can help you out in Seward and Otoe and Lancaster, wherever. Give them a shout today. You can log on, westbluerealty.com, or stop in when you're in town for the state tournament. Or if you live in Lincoln, 1120 K Street, Suite 200. Did you see the Joe Burrow tweet?
Yes.
So let us set this up. You've got different measurements coming out. It's underwear day at the NFL Combine, I guess.
Yeah, some of the stats, I think, take are just absurd.
Right.
Yeah.
So they'll measure. They'll give you measurements. So if they say that Elijah Herbal was a 6'6 offensive tackle at Southeast.
6'6 is a little generous, but I'll take it.
Well, you're tall. What are you, 6'3"?
6'3", 6'4", somewhere in there.
I'm 6'3", 6'4".
Depends how tall I'm standing.
Depending on what type
of... my tiptoes.
Right, what type of high tops you were rocking. But Joe Burrow got measured today, and two of his hands were measured, and height there was for Herbert and Eason and all those guys. And Joe Burrow comes in at 6'3" and some change, but Joe Burrow only measured to have 9-inch hands. That's a concern for some of those stat guys and scouts with the NFL. Is his hand big enough to throw the football? Now, Patrick Mahomes, his hand measures 9 1/4, right? And Joe Burrow sent this tweet out about 20 minutes ago, in response to the backlash of his tiny hands. Considering retirement, after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands. Please keep me in your thoughts.
That's good. I mean, he still came in at right at 9.
Yeah, he's...
Which is supposed to be like the minimum. It's like an NFL quarterback supposed to be a 9-inch hands. Lamar Jackson's got like 9.5.
Yeah.
Jake Fromm came in under today. That was concerning, which I think is stupid.
Well, is your hand big enough to avoid the left tackle or right tackle getting beat on 3rd and 9 to strip sack you? I mean, the ball's, depending on if you're outdoor or indoor, I mean, the ball's going to slip. It's a greasy pig. It happens. Let's get folks a pair of DeBebe tickets right now. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. DeBebe, Pinnacle Bank, Arena. This is the edited version. We pray to the good Lord. DeBebe, caller 4 right now, 466-3776, the 11th of March at PBA. I said caller 4. Caller 4 now gets a pair. We'll have more to give away throughout the week. Caller 4, 800-825-5865 or 466-3776. If Junior's on the phone, you are not eligible, son. Hour 2, Coach McBride next with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Tower 2 at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. I have missed this guy. I hope he's missed me. We welcome in Mr. Blackshirt. Mondays with Charlie. Charlie McBride back with us. Coach, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm getting better.
Well, good.
Faster. I'm getting much faster.
That 4.340 is back?
Let's go to 5.3.
5.3, that's okay. You're on. You're a hand in the dirt guy. So 5.3 will work, my friend.
And then 5.3 at 80, right?
Yeah, no kidding. I'll take it. Well, Coach, great to chat with you. I'm finally back into town and over.
Good.
Hacking up some stuff, so I'm excited to chat with you. And spring football is coming up here on March 9th. It'll get kicked off. Spring game's going to be the 18th of April, and you know, I want to kind of dive into a lot of different topics, but as we go forward with this upcoming spring in 2020, what are some things, you know, broadly, what are you interested in seeing and hearing about from this team? You know how the first 2 years have gone. They've shown some flashes. They've also had some disappointments, but it's year three, and there seems to be some more confidence, and there's been some changes also made. What's the agenda look like for this spring in 2020?
Well, I think the coaches probably got together and you know, zeroed in on the things that they really need to push on. You know, like we used to, for example, little things, you know, in techniques and things like that that we weren't doing good, whether it's tackling or whatever, you know, whatever the case is. And the other thing was is team stuff like turnovers. You know, it depends on what they were exactly last year and what they were. And, you know, it goes, it's kind of a thing, and you want to find out who remembers a lot. You there?
I'm right here. Yeah, someone's okay. Beeping in on your phone.
I'm getting a ding on my phone. You know, you want to and check to see how fast these young people can pick things up.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are there, and you know, but it's pretty much you're going to try some new stuff, and you want to try it right away, and you don't have a lot of hitting, you know, contact work. It's really kind of a tough thing to find out exactly, you know, where you're at until the fall. And but right now, I think the biggest thing is try to find out who's playing where.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
You know, you can look at a lot of things, and I know, you know, for example, one day way back when, you know, we had, I think Keneally came in as a tight end, and Tom, I mentioned to Tom, you know, that we thought maybe he'd be better on defense, and this was in practice now.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, why don't you just take him over there and see how he does, you know, right in the middle. That's how things happen, you know. I mean, then the next, you know, then there's something else where I've got a kid in Milton. May come in with Tom and say, you know, so-and-so, we want to try him at guard. Okay, go ahead, take him. You're going to take him anyway, so I might as well say okay. But, the personnel thing is really the hardest thing and the thing you want to try to really zero in on the spring. Your leadership and all those things come with it, but, you know, that stuff should have started pretty much in the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's when your season starts. And that's when, you know, a lot of times the chemistry begins to fit together. And that's a big, big thing with the team. I mean, that's huge. And and the other thing is to let the players know where they stand and where they, mm-hmm. you know, exactly what you're thinking. And being straight with them, I think, is really important. Because I think a lot of times, you got to be brutally honest, and whether it's changing position, whether it's, you know, changing from offense to defense, or, you know, so that's something that you have to really do in the spring and see where each player kind of holds up, because sometimes in the fall when you shock a kid or something like that, it doesn't work real good, and it's sometimes it spreads, you know, into the team, and, you know, because you get some negative talk going and things like that. So those are the things you got to really be careful of, that, you know, you get one or two guys that are talking negative, sometimes it's like a cancer, it just spreads.
Mm. Charlie McBride's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Mondays with Charlie. That's great insight there, Coach, when it comes to figuring out who's going to be where. The leadership side, the chemistry, and just lay out, all right, you need to do X, Y, and Z this spring, please. And that's my next question. Nebraska at outside linebacker, they are in desperate need, Coach, of getting somebody to get after the quarterback. Back when you were here and some of the guys that followed you guys just found kids to get after the quarterback. They were really talented. You had a succession of rush ends that went to the NFL. You were pretty much rush end you. And
right.
Nebraska's, is that something you made a point? Yeah, you wanted to get great players, but did you want to be, was that intentional? Let's go be a school that just is great at finding defensive ends.
Well, that, you know, one of the things is that we're so built on how big is this guy and how big is that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really talking about outside linebackers, because right now, if you're a 3-4, when we went to a 4-3, those outside backers put their hand on the ground.
Right.
And they could run. I mean, they could, you know, you're going to, we had guys from both sides that could, you know, really, really run well. Now, we had, later as time went on, we had them in pass coverage, in some what we call zone blitzes and things like that, where we'd, you know, they'd fake their running and drop in the flat or whatever the case is. But the thing was, is we weren't as concerned. Oh, we had guys that were 235, 240,
sure,
maybe. But we also had guys 195 pounds playing defensive end. And you'd say, well, he can't play the run. Well, they learned to play the run, and they played it, a lot of them really played it well. So, and, you know, it's just one of those things. Sometimes you get a little nervous about this guy may not be, you know, big enough to do what you want to do. And then the other thing is what guys have the athletic ability to do it. You know, and so, you know, it all, the personnel, the way they have it set up now is probably a little harder to figure out than it was when we were there, just because there's the four-man front and you,
sure,
the guys that could run and the guys that were tough and, you know, could rush the passer. You have to put them in position to be a good pass rusher. You can't line them up, you know, inside of the tight end or even head up sometimes. You got to get them in a position where they can, you know, they can go. And, you know, so it's a, you know, it's kind of a tough thing a lot of times for coaches to make those kind of decisions. And that's why I said sometimes we moved a strong safety to linebacker, say, for example. Well, that's or a defensive back to linebacker or something like that because of their speed. And, you know, sometimes it shakes them up a little bit. So you have to be careful with some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have a guy that's a defensive end or an outside backer and say, hey, listen, if we move this guy inside, you know, he's 275, 80 pounds, 290 or so, he'd be a heck of a five technique or,
sure,
you know, what they would call, I guess, a defensive end and a 4-3, not a, you know, would be playing inside. And why? Because he's an athlete, because he can run, because he can do things and find a position for your best athletes and put them up and let them go. I mean, and, you know, don't be shy. And I always use the terms, you know, if you want blitzers that you can see the skin peel off their eyeballs when they're running them, you know, and you know, that a lot of times you'll hear the first step or this kind of stuff, guys that can really accelerate right away and explode on the ball, and defensive linemen that have a burst when they come off of their rush, you know, or off of their move and things like that. And that's what you're looking for.
Coach Charlie McBride's checking in with us. It's a Monday edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, I know whenever you're evaluating talent like that, one of the things you really want to look at is physicality. And you mentioned that spring practices are less physical than fall camp. How much less physical are these spring practices going to be, or at least how much less physical were they whenever you were coach?
Yeah, when I was there, it looked like a scrimmage the whole time.
Yeah.
But then they changed the rules.
Sure.
Then they changed all the rules where they only had so many days of hitting. And, you know, I still feel the same thing. How do you teach football when you're just in helmets and shoulder pads? I mean, how do you do that? I mean, you can get the timing down maybe, or you can get the offense, the passing game down, and you can do a lot of things for the plus, but for the linemen, I mean, they need to, you know, they need to bang on each other, and they need to, you know, how to block and tackle, and they need to know how to do rush the passer and all this stuff. And if you don't do it with, you know, you don't teach a pass rusher and when you have six live days in the spring. That's a joke, you know. And so it's kind of, you know, whoever made up all those rules, they're all worried about the concussions and those kind of things. And so it's a tough thing to do, and a lot of times you have kids with great ability that could be better if they had a little more time when practice was a little bit more action in it, instead of just timing or running a play or something like that. You know, I mean, that isn't what happens on Saturday.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, Nebraska's got some of the kids that have redshirted, and now they've been part of the system for a couple of years. And you've got some positions of need that need to step forward, back to that pass rush discussion. How long do you wait on a kid before you move on to the next option? And I'm not talking about just getting rid of him. I'm just talking about checking out what else you have as far as behind him. And I ask that because you got some guys that haven't redshirted. They're already into their second year. And there's been a lot of upside. Their athleticism was really intriguing on film. You're waiting for it to show up on Saturdays. What's that like from a patient standpoint for you as a coach to stick with a kid, but also know that maybe it isn't going to happen for this guy? He'll be more of a role guy than a standout.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. I think that one thing we didn't do, and nobody did, I mean, we weren't the only ones. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much personnel changing. I think nowadays, I think it's really good to have a team that, if you're going to know it's a pass and down, that you've got guys, all of them, that can rush the passer. I mean, you have a pass rush team almost, you know. And so that would, you know, some guys, that is going to be their, you know, that's their spot. But they work with the team. You know, they learn to play the run. They learn all that stuff. But they just happen to have a little more speed that maybe don't play the run as well, or this or that. And so those are the things the coaches have to, you know, decide how they're using their personnel. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes you lose track of it. We didn't do that as much because we just had fast people playing all the time, and our philosophy was kind of be able to not change personnel as much and leave guys out on the field without a lot of that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And everybody's doing it now. Everybody has personnel changes and, you know, kind of the NFL type of thing.
Sub packages come in on 3rd and 8, right? You know?
Yeah. So we were looking for you know, maybe you got some guys that are specialists. And what they do is rush the passer. Well, there's nothing wrong with putting them in the game, you know, but you work them during the week against the run and against things that are important, just like you would other people. Now, the guys that are playing, maybe starting, and there's a guy that can rush the passer better,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not blind,
sure.
You know, and so a lot of it is understandable. It's, you know, being able to understand it, but that person that you're changing has to be ready to go because you may not change. Mm-hmm. It may be the part of the field you don't want to change them in.
Sure.
And so there's so many, you know, so many. That's why you get into these stinking meetings and coaches fight with each other about stuff like that. That's when, you know, that's when the real decisions are made. And I think that in the spring, you know, when you're looking at pass rush guys, or you're looking at drop guys that play good on space, linebacker, for example, you can have a great run block linebacker. I mean, he could play the run, but he's not as good in space as Joe, mm-hmm. You know. So he has to understand that may, when it's passing downs, you may not be in the game. And I know when we first started that, you know, there was a little bit of grumbling going on. But, you know, after a while, they understood it. And, you know, when you're successful and you're doing things right, that's easier. When you're losing and you're doing things and kids start making stuff up. So that's a tough thing. You got to be careful how you're doing it. But I think that it's – you know, offensively. You know, it's the same deal with running backs. Some guy can't catch the ball as well as the other, but he's their best runner. But we got a guy that can do both. Well, you know, there's going to be times when that guy that, you know, that can't catch the ball as well isn't going to be in the game.
Charlie McBride's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, awesome to get caught up. We'll talk next Monday. How's that sound?
I'll be here.
That's awesome. Thank you, Coach.
Okay, thanks, guys.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Many thanks to Charlie McBride. Good to talk personnel and agenda for him for the upcoming spring ball. That can't get here soon enough. We are going to say hi to Greg Smith here in just a moment. And you can find Greg on Twitter, at GregSmithHV on Twitter. Greg, what do you know? How's it going today?
Going pretty good. How about yourself? How was the weekend? Did you enjoy the grill?
I did, man. I didn't tweet any pictures out last night. I should have. Junior had basketball all day yesterday. So I did a couple of sirloins, a couple of pork chop, kind of the pork, I don't know, boat is what I call them because they're wonderful. Like the pork flank, right?
Okay.
And then a couple of giant burgers, purposefully getting a burger, two burgers instead of one, and knowing that the wife would eat only half of one. So, yeah, there's some leftovers going. So, crush the grill, but I got to get some new grill grates, to be honest with you. I need to get some new infrared grill grates.
Okay. Save it for next season, and that way you start the season fresh.
See, I know I should, but these things are, we're working on 9 years.
Oh.
Around 8 or 9, and it's the best Father's Day gift you can get yourself, right? Oh, happy Father's Day. Here's a grill. And by the way, those payments are now yours. But I'm not bitter about anything. Greg, a lot to get to, and I was kind of talking with Coach McBride, and there are some names that you and I both think of for Nebraska football where, all right, it's time for the talent to match the hype with guys who need a big-time spring. And it's not that they're going to not still be on the team, but, you know, where's the window at with some of the kids in this 2018, 2019 recruiting class? And a guy I'm thinking of is Caleb Tanner outside. And this isn't to just get in line and call out Caleb. I'm not doing that. I think he's a big-time talent. He was sought after. Nebraska got him. Nebraska can make things happen for him, and he can make things happen for Nebraska. But he's one of guys that need to have a really good spring. Obviously, Adrian wants to solidify and kind of keep a death grip on that quarterback starting spot as well with his performance. Mills, clearly. Those are just three names that have experience. But you're really waiting for Tanner to pop. Is that one of the more key spots you're looking at here this spring?
Yeah, his position overall, outside linebacker, is one of the key ones because you don't just need just him and, say, Garrett Nelson and JoJo to continue to take a step forward. You need a couple more guys to help to continue to provide depth, right? So it's kind of a position-wide thing. I think you nailed it with Caleb. I think that Caleb will be on, you know, as people start to get ready for, like, you know, most important spring guys or even most intriguing players. I know Derek's already been talking to me about doing that. Caleb is going to find himself on all of those lists. And I think in a way, you know, it's a good thing because I think that the fire will be under him a little bit to make sure that he's doing all the right things off the field and in the weight room to continue to get himself ready. But also there's more competition coming to his position group. And I think that that's going to be something that gets talked about with a number of different positions. You touched on Adrian. I think that that's another situation where that competition will end up helping him as well. Even guys that you know are entrenched like Dedrick Mills, he's going to be the starter, but that he's going to get pushed by Ramir Johnson and others. But Caleb Tanner, first and foremost, I think is a guy because of the importance of his position that a lot of people are going to be circling come this spring.
Greg Smith's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at GregSmithHV on Twitter. Greg, let's talk about some redshirt guys that you've spent a lot of time covering and talking to, and They've had a chance to spend an offseason, get recovered in some instances when you look at Henrich and Ty Robinson and Ben Hart. And what are your expectations for them? Are you expecting major steps forward for major snaps, or are you expecting more of still kind of a role, i.e., all right, Robinson and Ben Hart, we're not going to throw you in because A, you're not ready, or B, you didn't win the job, but you're still going to see some time. Henrich, I mean, we know how thin Nebraska is at the inside backer spot, so he's kind of got to be ready to rock and roll despite being banged up last year. But those three guys, what are you expecting from them out of spring?
You know, it's really interesting with those three guys. I think they're in slightly different positions where it feels like Ben Hart is being talked about as a guy who people are kind of expecting to be a starter, right, coming into the season. Is they expect him to force Matt Farniak to be kicked inside the guard, and then you end up with a redshirt freshman, Bryce Ben Hart, starting at right tackle. And he has the tools to do that. I think that was what most all of us expected, especially those who follow him closely in the recruiting world, knowing that he was going to have to put that weight back on after staying in high school a little bit longer to compete in wrestling and not arrive until last summer. So it's natural for him to take that full year to get up to speed, and I think that he could be a day one starter this coming season. Ty Robinson is a slightly different boat where he's got a lot of competition. There's a lot of bodies when you start listing out those defensive linemen, but I think that he could be a guy that makes a major jump and could push for a starting spot this year, and it'll be interesting to see though what position he plays though, right? Because he plays nose tackle some last year in that Wisconsin game, recruited as a classic 3-4 defensive end. So we got to see where he settles position wise. And Henrich has got a lot of guys nipping at his heels now, including junior college guys like Yetiva Maga Clements, who's already here and enrolled in January. He's a guy that could use a huge, healthy spring to remind people of why it was that he was so sought after during the recruiting process.
Greg Smith's joining us on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Greg, when you look at the spring football, and I mean, I know I personally love watching the spring game and seeing the ones going up against the ones, because that's just the exciting stuff where you're going to see how good a position group actually is. Do you think we're going to see much ones versus ones in this upcoming spring game?
I hope so, especially if it goes the way we kind of think it will, where there'll be a lot of competition for different positions. You're going to want to see good on good in a lot of those scenarios. But the other good thing, you increase competition across the board on the team, and we do think that the talent level is rising on the team. The recruiting rankings reflect that. But even if it's ones versus twos, the gap should not be as big. And that's how you know that when you're starting to really get something going, Nebraska just has to get to that point. But I do hope that that we get to see a lot of ones versus ones.
You know, Elijah and I spent time talking about Scott Docterman's article, and I know you know Scott, and he did a lot of years covering Iowa, and TJ Bowlers is a guy I talk to you about twice a week. and you know what? When we talk about Bowlers, Wisconsin, from a fit and multiplicity standpoint, is a very real threat. Same with Coach Cox and Wilcox and Cal, right? I mean, it's no secret that Wisconsin and Cal are two intriguing stops for Bowlers and his skill set. But with Nebraska, the thing that they've done that may keep them in this 3 or 4 team race is how well they've been able to personally connect. Speak to that if you could when it comes to Dawson and Chin and of course Frost. You hear about it, but it seems like this is kind of a longer lasting, wow, this guy does give a crap about me type moment, because Nebraska's still in the thick. They have not shown much success consistently defensively. The pitch is come be a game changer for us versus ready-made go out to the NFL with Wisconsin. So, but Nebraska's message is still hanging in the air, isn't it, with Bowler?
Yeah, and I think that part of the pitch too, and that connection is that this staff just relates well to people, right? We've kind of seen this, you know, when they were down in Florida, and it's carried over to Nebraska, where you talk to parents, players, you talk to high school coaches, they all talk about how personable these guys are, how much they themselves love football, you know, how much they love to talk about wanting kids that love football, but they themselves love football, and they do a really good job of connecting and recruiting the entire family. How many times have you heard that come up, especially with guys like Ryan Held. They recruit the whole family. Now, TJ Bowlers is a little bit of a unique situation, though, and part of the reason that I think it's getting overlooked a little bit is that, yes, his dad went to Iowa, even though Iowa's basically eliminated from contention at this point, but his roommate at Iowa was Eric Chenander. They have a relationship that goes back quite a ways, so those two are really tight and in good communication, so that helps Nebraska. And Nebraska will be in the thick of this. I still expect them to get an official visit from TJ Bowlers, and I still continue to say, as I always do, that Iowa State to me is the dark horse, provided that Matt Campbell stays there. I think sure. The family is concerned about Matt Campbell and how it seems how much his name comes up in other job searches because teams want him so much.
Well, don't kid yourself. I mean, Florida State was that was their first pick, was Campbell. That $9 million buyout has shrunk, not much, but a little bit. But the Chenander Bowlers connection, but it is TJ's decision, right?
Right.
Not mom, not dad. They love Nebraska. They love Iowa State. Why? What's your read? Why is there a disconnect? I mean, Iowa sent a lot of defensive guys to the NFL, specifically in the front seven the last 12, 15 years.
I think there's two things for me. One, the 3-4 versus the 4-3, I think is a big deal for TJ. And I think we see this from each cycle where sometimes guys are not convinced that they can go from that defensive end to that outside linebacker in the 3-4. I think TJ's kind of the opposite situation. I think he really is looking forward to playing at a 3-4 defense in college at the outside linebacker spot. And then it's kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about with Nebraska as far as the connection with a kid. Sometimes for whatever reason, it doesn't happen that way, but I think the bond is just formed a lot tighter between TJ and Nebraska, Iowa State, Wisconsin, especially kind of Cal as well, than it has with the staff over at Iowa.
Bowlers is a dude that loves school and wants to be an engineer. For God's sake, he, you know, unloads broccoli every morning or whatever else is in the old produce truck. I hated those mornings with the produce truck ringing the doorbell. But from a football love, is he a guy that is like Garrett Nelson football love, or is he a guy that is really, really awesome at football that puts up with it? What do you gauge from his personality in discussions
I would say he's closer to Garrett Nelson than he is just kind of putting up with it because he's good at it, but no one is quite Garrett Nelson. That's a unique situation, but he's closer to that than just being a guy who's good at football. He enjoys doing the little things. He enjoys working out. I know the trainer that he works with out in Iowa a lot, and they just rave about him and the work that he puts in with those other kids, which is a whole other factor with this as well, is the fact of Nebraska trying to recruit so many of those kids that know each other. That can't hurt either, but he's definitely a grinder, which is also what you want for a kid that's talented.
It's Greg Smith. Follow him on Twitter at GregSmithHV. Good stuff on the recruiting end of things. Greg, fire that grill up again. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks as always. Enjoy the leftovers.
How about take care.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Greg Smith and Charlie McBride this hour. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal podcast will be up in a little while. HaleVarsity.com or iTunes, and Elijah will get some of the greatest hits today on SoundCloud. You can find that on ESPN Lincoln's Twitter handle and the interviews from today on the on-demand ESPNLincoln.com. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. A reminder about buckling up. Seatbelts prevent excessive injury. When your vehicle and body need to slow down in a hurry, that applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or backseat. Buckle up now. Click it or tick it. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. It's been kind of a drudgeful February where you don't have a ton of football news. You've got recruiting stuff that's good, and you're just kind of waiting for spring ball to kick off. But the brakes have been slammed, not pumped, and it's been quiet, which is fine. Quiet means nose to the grindstone. Quiet means hard work. You're waiting for Husker baseball to kind of get things flipped around. In basketball, you need something good. You just do. Good effort tonight. Win against Northwestern. See if you can upset Ohio State. Busy and big week for Nebraska basketball. So let's dive into it. Coach Hoiberg spent some time Sunday before the team departed for Champaign. And, you know, Nebraska is going to do what they do because they're not littered with 7-footers or 6'11 guys. It's time to go with what worked, at least against Purdue, right? And earlier in the year against Iowa. What worked was two of your only wins in conference. But pack that Peyton mentality. Here's Fred.
You know, we just feel like the way we're built right now without without a lot of rim protection behind, we have to try to pack it in. And, you know, a couple of the threes that we've given up lately, you know, they've been things that we can control. With our hand down, you got to have a high hand closeout. Even if they're struggling shooting, we allowed that to happen last game with a couple guys that had not been shooting the ball well, but we gave them confidence by not closing out with the urgency that we needed to. On our double teams, which I thought we did a good job of, we gave up two strong side threes. That can't happen. That's the easiest rotation there is. And we had two times where we closed out. We were there, but again, the hand wasn't high. Three of them in transition, two offensive rebound kickouts. You know, those are the ones that hurt you. When you don't get back and you go underneath Cassius on one, we don't have communication on one. The Gabe Brown hit in the left wing. You know, so those are things we look at and talk about and try to eliminate. But, you know, a lot of times it's not in the pack end. We had one where we had what we call two-way help. The guy was at the elbow. Penetration came, had to stunt the nail, and then not able to get back out. So do your work early, closing out with urgency with a high hand.
So that was Fred. How long was that? 3 hours?
No, it was 1 minute and 10 seconds. Uh-huh.
That was supposed to be edited down on my end. I thought it was. It wasn't. So let's see if we get a repeat here on doubling down. I went tequila. You went fireball. Is that right? As far as we're doubling down?
I'm not. I'll take some chocolate milk, maybe.
Chocolate. Good answer. So better days, you hope, are ahead. Yes, for Nebraska basketball. Is that in the 2020 season? Or is it the off season?
I'll just let you know this doubling down cut's the exact same as the pack the paint mentality cut.
Okay. Take a claw hammer to the computer. Moving forward, so you got both of them. Listen, I don't fault playing the percentages. The thing that sucks for Nebraska is that everyone set a freaking career high, it feels like, on Nebraska with 3-point shooting. And it comes down to some guy getting their hand up or knowing his assignment or doing his assignment. And that's where I'd lose my bleeping mind if I'm Hoiberg.
Yeah, I said this after the Wisconsin game on this show, was that there's reaches a point where it's no longer coincidence that every single team that comes to a Pinnacle Bank Arena is shooting their best 3-point percentage of the year against the Huskers.
It's not.
It can't be coincidence.
And you get an inside out, post touch, and then kick out. It's a rhythm shot. But you got to have your guards not on Pluto. You're not going to be perfect every time. But the thing that I watched against Michigan State is guys had hit a three, you know, back when they were hitting threes, and then they'd be jacking around and then not get back on defense, and then they'd, oh, yeah, I got to play defense. That would piss me off to no end. And Nebraska gets nailed. I'm talking to the wall. Something bad will happen on an offensive possession. They'll miss a shot or they'll get a layup that finds glass but no rim. They'll get down, they'll get frustrated, and then, or they'll take a quick three on a possession, miss it, and the other team comes back and gets a quick two, a dunk, or a three. And then they slump their shoulders, not everybody, but some kids on Fred's team. That's the thing. I hope that the guys that are uber talented and athletic and you went out and got to be some scorers, because from a physicality standpoint, just a physical gift standpoint, you've got guys on this team that are hard to check when their head's in it. You don't have a lot of guys that have their head into it. It's been a brutal adjustment for them to go from junior college to the Big Ten. And it's gotten worse before it's gotten better. You're not going to always have consistency, but you've always not had mental toughness either. So I got to see that tonight. You're going to see a mentally tough team from Illinois. Underwood, not Frank, but this Underwood. I mean, Illinois was garbage a year ago, but you could see flashes. And maybe you're waiting to see a flash from Nebraska tonight, see if they bring it, but Illinois is a handful this evening.
The thing that has always stood out about Brad's teams is just the pressure that they play with. And it's a team that's playing with so much confidence right now. The guards that they have, especially with Griffin coming off the bench, playing with a ton of confidence with the way he's shooting the ball. And then those other three guys that start, their ability to get into the paint and make plays. And then you got Kofi and the big guys that can just dominate the paint in there and have a huge size advantage on us. So, just have to do the best job we can, try to help off the guys that are not shooting the ball well, even though that stung us. This season, but just try to play the percentages on a few of their players.
That's what you're going to do. More thoughts about Nebraska. How are they going into this thing tonight? They want to make something happen. Are they a spoiler? And if you go with the full spoiler mentality, you're kind of waving the white flag. So I don't know that Nebraska is going in with that spoiler mindset.
No, we just talked about playing, going out and playing hard. I looked at that first half. Yeah, I think we've given up threes in the last shot of the half, last three games. A couple of them were crazy shots. But, we've been right there, and we've had opportunities. But then we have that lull that seems to happen every second half. And, last game, that was a seven-point game with 8 minutes left. We still had a chance. We had a wide-open three to cut it to four. And then they hit a three, get a turnover, hit another three. Now it's 13, and we're done. That's when we really hang our heads and come down and get away from ourselves on the offensive end. So,
That's a reality. It can't happen. It's got to stop. And if it's not somebody on the basketball team leadership-wise that tells them to snap out of it, it's got to be the coach. And at this point, they're just continuing to battle. A couple more thoughts from Hoiberg. Tip off at 7. BTN tonight?
Good question. I have my sister's jazz band concert to go to, so I'll have to pull it up on YouTube TV or something on my phone.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm thinking tonight.
Yeah.
Better call Saul's on at 8.
Yeah, just check into the game and see if it's close,
It'll be close. Then it won't be.
Cross my fingers.
We'll have a prediction next.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Monday. Good stuff from Coach McBride. Great stuff from, of course, Jacob Bedilla. And bookending it from Hail Varsity, Greg Smith, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. So Patrick Mahomes has quote tweeted Joe Burrow considering retirement after being informed the football will be slipping out of his hands because they were too small. Patrick Mahomes said, my small hands are doing all right so far. I believe in you. So some voice of support on social media. Jose Altuve has been beaned already in spring training. First time he went to bat, he got plunked. That is good. Elijah, you're an umpire.
Uh-huh.
How lenient would you be, or would you set the table early warning-wise for opposing pitchers?
I think you'd know going into that game. You got a plate meeting before, and I'd tell each manager that, hey, I know what the situation is here. I'm not an idiot. Better watch it. That first one that Altuve got plunked with seemed to be a curveball that was lost. So that one's tough to throw a pitcher for because it's pretty easy to lose a curveball. If he's taking any fastballs, then I'm not having any. I'm tossing a pitcher.
There's been a batter or two you had to hate that you didn't secretly feel that bad about.
Well, there were definitely some where where it's right on the line whether or not they leaned into it or not.
Sure.
So I tell him to stay.
Are you one of those guys, though, and I've only had you ump Junior's team. I haven't had you do anything, but you've umped a couple of times when Junior was playing, and pretty fair, dude. I mean,
I try my best.
Your strike zone's decent, and you're not one of those guys that if a guy leans into a pitch that's uber obvious, you don't tell him to come back, or you're not a delayed call guy either, where the kid starts trotting to first before.
And then you bring him back? Yeah. Oh, that frustrates me. I'm going to say right away. I'm going to throw my hands up and point at the batter's box and say, stay there.
So if we set something up where Junior is at the dish and there's a really outside, we're not even talking on the black, we're talking just way outside, like he's a left-handed batter,
mm-hmm.
and you ring him up, and say Junior would hypothetically draw a line where the ball crossed, would you launch him for that? He took the end of his bat and drew a line saying, this is where it went over. That was not a strike.
It depends on if he was clearly trying to communicate it to me, which, I mean, you'd assume so.
Oh, completely.
But if he looks up at me, puts his hands on the hips, and then draws the line in the sand, then I'm tossing him. But
it's going to happen. I'm going to film this. It's going to happen.
You're going to tell him to do it? You're going to get
No, I'm going to tell you to do it, and I want to see him get launched.
You want to see your own son get tossed from a baseball game?
It's going to be his mother shortly. So
I've actually never tossed a kid from a baseball game.
How about a parent?
A parent? I've threatened to. Usually what I do is I'll go tell the coach. I'll say, hey, if you don't...
Parents suck. Not all of you, but some of us in our worst moments suck as baseball parents.
I hate throwing fans. Here's the umpiring secret. Is you go talk to the coach and you say, hey, if that fan keeps on talking to me, I'm going to throw you.
Okay.
That's what you tell them. And make the coach go deal with their own parents.
That's the way to be.
There's your secret for umpiring.
All right. More thoughts on Nebraska tomorrow. We'll talk to Rick Pizzo. Mitch Sherman will be with us. Good to be back with Elijah Herbel, Chris Schmidt. And find the show, HailVarsity.com, iTunes, on the road a couple of times. Today, we'll be down in the rail yard. The Hale Varsity office is Wednesday. An amazing film that is out, 50 Summers. We'll have that on the docket this week. Of course, Longwell's ahead of Ohio State Thursday. Talk to you at 4 tomorrow with Hale Varsity. Thanks.